हरि ओ हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, chapter 17, punishment and reward of Kali. Pratigya, Srimad Bhagavatam 1:17, 28-30, 38-39. Maharaj Parikit, who could fight 1,000 enemies single-handedly, thus pacified the personality of religion and the earth. Then he took up a sharp sword to kill the personality of Kali, who is the cause of all irreligion. When the personality of Kali understood that the king was willing to kill him, he at once abandoned the dress of a king and under pressure of fear completely surrendered unto him. Right, because he could look at it like, hey, he's not going to kill me because I'm one of the avatars, right? You know, I'm a middle level functionary here, and so, you know, he's not going to do anything. But when he figures out he is, then okay, then so, you know, just like that other time with Prithu Maharaj, with Bhumi Devi. Right? So then, you know, when she figured out he was willing to kill her, then, you know, okay, then we can talk. You know, but like before that, then everybody does a trip. Right. But, yeah. Yes.
Is it the Shudra mentality that you push a person up to the end and they won't give it up? Or?
Basically. Only when you see that the loss is so much greater than any gain, or there's going to be no gain, there's only going to be total loss, then it's kind of like, okay. So that's why the scriptures, we may wonder why sometimes they talk in such absolute terms, you know, in such strong terms. It's because the tendency is we don't give up until there is nothing left, you know, like that. So, you know, here, because he's the cause of all irreligion. So if irreligion is the problem, that's because of the influence of Kali. So then only when we're under the same pressure like Kali is, then we have a tendency to surrender. So that's why the Shastra gives the very nice, pleasant, sweet, attractive element, because that's the nature of the soul. But because the soul is identified with the conditioning, therefore you have to have the other side also. Like that. And under pressure of fear, completely surrendered to him, bowing his head. Maharaj Parikit, who was qualified to accept surrender and worthy of being sung in history, did not kill the poor, surrendered, and fallen Kali, but smiled compassionately, for he was kind to the poor. Sudha Goswami said, Maharaj Parikit, thus being petitioned by the personality of Kali, gave him permission to reside in places where gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter were performed. The personality of Kali asked for something more, and because of his begging, the king gave him permission to live where there is gold, because wherever there is gold, there is also falsity, intoxication, lust, envy, and enmity. Because the point is gambling, drinking, prostitution, animals costs money, right? Yeah. So therefore, if you can be where there's gold, then hey, now you got a complete package, right? You know, so they all go together. Yes.
But he was supposed to kill him, not to give a chance to innocent to associate with him.
Because of the element of surrender.
So if it was like in Satya Yuga, for example, he wouldn't still kill him?
No. Because the point is when someone's surrendered like that, that there's change. Because the point, what's the point of punishment? It's retribution, that there has to be some equal reaction to what you've done. So now, so that you understand and stop that. If you've already corrected that, then there's no need. So that's why the sincerity of that surrender is important. Does that make sense? Because the point is the soul is eternal. The soul is supposed to move on. Right? Because the soul is supposed to progress. So on the material platform, in the general, that's why the question will come up, why he didn't kill him. Right? So that will be discussed. Like that. Because the general tendency would be, because people don't change, but he was dressed like that, and that. But he is actually also an Avesha avatar. So then he can understand how he's going to behave and stuff like that. So otherwise, he's just going to do whatever he likes. But then here, the Bricket Maharaj then restricts that it can only work in certain ways. So basically, where there's not these things, then basically he's not there. But where those things are, that's where he can provide his influence. Otherwise, he's putting his influence everywhere. So then Prickett Maharaj is restricted. Yes?
That's the question I had ever since I first read that verse, many years ago. He said, you can go where there are these four things. And then Kali asked for more. But why did he ask for another place in the first place?
Because his point is where there's gold, then you have the mentalities to get involved in these four. Because the thing is he can only live where these things are going on. But this is the beginning of Kali Yuga, it's not really going on. So how does he perform his duties? So if where gold is being held, that way people get, because of that they get intoxicated, they get greedy, the falsity, then he can work on them and get them involved in these things. Because he generally sees those who have lots of money, these things follow. Yes. It's only rarely you hear about someone that has, means all facility and doesn't get involved in these. They're considered a very rare breed. But if someone has a lot of money and they're doing all these four, you won't think that this is abnormal. It's pretty normal. It may not be nice, but it's standard. Is that something, sir?
Yeah.
Okay, chapter 17 summarizes questions and answers. Question 23 of Srimad Bhagavatam is asked by Maharaj Parikit of the personality of Kali. Question 23. King Parikit asked Kali to identify himself, then asked if he dared beat a cow and bull because Lord Krishna and Arjuna are out of sight. 5 and 6. Not waiting for a reply from Kali, Parikit then asked the bull question 24 of Srimad Bhagavatam. King Parikit asked the bull to identify himself and ask if he is really a demigod. He asked who cut off three of the bull's legs. 7:12. Answer. In verses 17 to 20, the bull declined to say who he was and who had cut his three legs, pleading that different philosophies of causation conflicted one another. He left it to the king to ascertain his identity and the cause of his suffering. In verses 22 to 27, Maharaj Parikit answers question 23 and 24 himself, noting the bull's pious unwillingness to accuse his attacker. The king identifies the bull as Dharma. Parikit says the distress of the bull and cow is caused by the arrival of the age of Kali, in the form of the black man dressed as a king. All this had transpired by the jugglery of the Lord's energies, beginning with the time factor. So now the time factor has changed, so therefore everything moves with it. That's the thing. Time makes all things happen. We may say, why is this happening? Why are bad things happening? It's time. It's not something else. It's not a lack of this or a lack of that. So the problem that things that are not nice happen to people that think they're nice, then it's time factor. That's all. Something that is supposed to be in one way gets reversed. It's not that it'll remain that way, because by time it will go back. So in other words, if there's a standard position of something, it will be most of the time in that position. But by the time factor, it can be reversed. Right? So therefore, that's why we see Dharmaraj is not so willing to give blame to anybody, because it's just time. Time is just going. So, and time is just doing what it does. It's not that you can blame the machine. Right? Yes.
If you did something bad and you got the immediate reaction,
yes,
wouldn't that teach you better? You know what I mean? Like if you're not behaving properly or not doing your responsibility.
But that's okay as long as then you think that it's the results of your endeavor. And that the endeavor is wrong. You know the standard. You trained what it should be, so therefore it does. Otherwise, you just see it as an obstacle in your plan and make a new plan. Or blame everybody else.
I was just thinking it would make you more conscious that not to do that because you're getting an immediate reaction.
So it means you did something, and as you walk from your living room into the bedroom, then when you notice a kind of like tapping sound on the floor you haven't heard before, and when you look down you notice you have four hooves and you have a funny flat nose, okay. You want it to happen like that or something like that?
Okay.
Okay, so you'll give it till next life, okay? Yeah, okay. Right? Who knows, like every day you come home, all your family members are in different forms and stuff like that. Huh? Yeah, of course. That's it. Oh, you've been a bad boy.
How did you know?
Okay, Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 17th chapter, the questions and answers between Parikkhita and Dharma and the punishment and mercy received by Kali are described. Maharaj Parikkhita challenges and threatens the low-class man dressed as a king, who is beating the cow and the bull. Maharaj Parikkhita then questions and consoles the cow and bull. The bull answers Maharaja's inquiries about the cause of his distress. After hearing the bull's reply, Maharaj Parikkhita recognizes the bull to be the personality of religion, dharma, and begins to answer him with words full of respect. Maharaj Parikkhita, upon concluding his reply to dharma, prepares to kill Kali. But we have to remember here is that he's qualified, because otherwise people won't be able to see these personalities. The regular person doesn't see Dharma and Bhumi walking around as cows, or Kali Raj and his, you know. So because of his mystic potency, he was able to see, and that's only because he wanted to, right? Because that's the thing, people that have special powers, they only work when they want them to, because if they work when they don't want them to, they're just an annoyance. So that means it's less piety, right? In other words, someone who always sees in a certain way, then if they don't want to see that way, that's less piety. If they can control when they see like that or not, it's more. So he can see when he wants.
Yes.
And so therefore he has the qualification to understand that who he actually is seeing. So he can understand this is Dharma, this is Bhumi, this is
yes.
Like that. Okay. Maharaj Parikkhita, on concluding his reply to Dharma, prepares to kill Kali. But Kali submissively bows down and surrenders to the king. Maharaj Parikkhita spares Kali's life, but orders his banishment. Right? Because that's the thing, is that something is there, so if they're unfit, they're banished. That's the point. It's just like with Brahmins. Brahmins aren't killed, they're banished. Like that. Kali requests a place where he can live according to his nature, right? Because you're banished from the kingdom, which is the standard rule. But now if your kingdom is, you know, the whole Bhul Mandala and even beyond, because he can't function in other places. It's not that he has influence, let's say, in the heavenly planets. Because they're not performing karma, right? They're not at work, they're on vacation. Right? So if Kali's job is to influence people at work,
yes,
then he can't bother people on vacation. You understand? So the whole universe is simply living out the results of their endeavors when they were human. So only those areas where Parikkhita Maharaj rules, those are where, that's Punya Bhumi, that's where you can perform the activities. So when he banishes them from his kingdom, he'll end up going, having to go back to wherever he does in the heavenly planets or anywhere else. He can't do anything. So therefore, he requests some place within his kingdom. Because otherwise there is no place. And he even has beyond. The Kimpurushas are also not within the rules of karma. Right? So he even is controlling places that are beyond what we understand. Right? Kali requests a place where he can live according to his nature without fear. Right? Because he has a nature. Right, tribals live in the forest because of their nature. Right? Like if the tribal living out in the forest goes out into the forest and picks something up and brings it home, does anybody say there's a problem?
No.
No. Even though technically he didn't pay for it. Mm-hmm. You understand? So people who like to go and pick up things that they see interesting to them and take it home, mm-hmm. right? That mentality can only function out in the forest because there it's not considered bad. But if you bring that person into the city, anything he sees, he takes home. He's called a thief. You understand? So this whole, oh, why are they banished to the forest? No. That's where they can act according to their nature. So the Vedic culture is very broad. It even gives a place for people who are thieves by nature. They live in the forest. Right? Like that. So here, without fear. Maharaj Parikit gives Kali permission to dwell in five places where gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter take place, and where gold is hoarded, right? Not where gold is being used nicely, where it's hoarded, right? Genuine Brahmins and sannyasis should never come in contact with such places. After Maharaj Parikit sends Kali away, he reestablishes the principles of religion. So that means if you don't go to these places, you won't be affected by it.
Yes.
And if you don't hoard gold, you won't get the mentality that you're attracted to these places. Yes.
Should anyone else be at those places?
No one should be there, but at least genuine Brahmins and sannyasis should avoid these places, because then there's a chance of keeping the Brahminical culture going.
Because
they're the ones who give the guidance in that. So if that's going on nicely, then people can see that it's not good to be there and remove themselves from it.
Yes.
So just as Kali pulls you in, then these others can pull you out. Shloka Anusharanam. Summary of verses 1 to 16. Maharaj Parikit consoles the earth in Dharma, 17 to 27. The conversation between Maharaj Parikit and Dharma, and 28 to 45. The surrender and reward of Kali, verses 1 to 16. Maharaj Parikit consoles the earth in Dharma. In this section, Suta Goswami describes how Maharaj Parikit challenges the Shudra dressed as a king, who is beating the cow and the bull. Maharaj Parikit then questions and consoles the cow and bull. Suta Goswami continues his narration, describing for the sages that upon his arrival at the place where Dharma and Bhumi had been conversing in the forms of a bull and a cow, Maharaj Parikit saw Shudra in the dress of a king beating the cow and bull with his club as if they had no protector. And at this time, they're going on with the conversation, right? They're just going on and discussing things, you know, as if things are pretty much just normal, right? And Kali's going on doing whatever he does, you know. So you're talking about very, very qualified people here, you know, like that. So you don't really see much of that kind of character, right? The bull was as white as a lotus flower. As he stood upon one leg, the bull was so terrified that his entire body trembled and he was passing urine. The cow was bereft of her calf, and due to being beaten upon the leg, she was very weak and distressed. With tears in her eyes, she was hankering for some grass in the field. Because that's the nice thing. You think of a nice... When there's a distress, you think of what's shelter. So for a cow, a nice open field, nice, you know, pleasant sun, plenty of nice grass, you know, just a very beautiful environment. Can you imagine that? It's just like, let's say, you take a kid, right, and you put him in a football field. The whole football field is just covered with sweets. It doesn't get better than that, right? You know, so for a cow, you look at a field, it's just all food, right? We look, oh, nice field. They just look nice food, you know. So we're thinking, yeah, you know, or, you know, the animals don't get a whole lot out of, you know, we're the humans, we get so much. But, you know, other, you know, maybe at a buffet you have so many items there that you can see. But that's not a field. You've never seen a buffet as big as a field, right? Cows have, right? You know, so who's getting more ecstasy out of seeing their food, right? Okay. Right? Yeah. 1 to 3. In his purports of this section, Srila Prabhupada describes different symptoms of Kali, Kali Yuga. The first symptom of Kali is that so-called Kshatriya, who are really Shudras, and degraded Vaishyas, cooperate to make animal slaughter a big business. The principal sign of the Kali Yuga is that the lower class Shudras, i.e. men without Brahminical culture and spiritual initiation, will be dressed like administrators or kings. It doesn't mean that they don't have an underlying Kshatriya nature. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily that they do. How many people can recognize one?
Yeah.
Right? So, but the point is because they have no, there's no training in Brahminical culture, no practice of that, there's no spiritual initiation, therefore they will act as Shudras. You take a Kshatriya, a child with Kshatriya potential, don't train him and don't give him initiation into Brahminical culture, he will be a Shudra. Right? He'll think like a Shudra. But the areas that he likes to think like a Shudra are in the areas of administration. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the difficulty.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when we say they're all Shudras, it means how they're behaving. Not necessarily that that's their conditioning. But the point is that the conditioning is left in an undeveloped state, it stays as Shudra.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So everyone, no matter what their qualification, they're born as a Shudra. You have to train to get out of that. You don't train, it remains that way.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's just like, let's say, a child has the potential to learn. You teach him to read and write, then he's educated. You don't, he's uneducated.
So this is why we say in Kali Yuga, everybody basically...
Everybody should. Yes. Yeah. And that we're being nice. It's technically, it's lower than should.
Sure.
Yes.
How do we understand that if everyone is a Shudra in Kali Yuga, some have a tendency to Brahmanical?
No, they may have all these, the natural proportion that is there in Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra will be there all the time, no matter what the age. The point is in the first three ages, there's training, so they take advantage of these higher positions. In the Kali Yuga, they don't. So, basically, everybody starts as Shudra and then drops below that. That's why even he says so-called. You know, lower caste Shudras, basically, because there is no fourth caste. So outcasts aren't technically their own caste. They're just lower class Shudras.
But,
yes, they're technically just lower end Shudras because there is no fifth caste. It's not like, I mean, it has two meanings that. One is that it's not like it's a bona fide caste, so there's another one outside of that. No, there's only four. So if you're not following the four, you're outside of it. There isn't anything else. The same time, since you're categorizing everybody according to their nature, therefore, then the Malechas, Yavanas, the tribals are low-class Shudras. Right? So in other words, they have that material mentality, but it's not pious, because a Shudra means it's material but pious.
Yes.
Right? It's the tendency is not necessarily towards spiritual. Well, the Dvijas means it always has that spiritual influence, but how much, that's another thing. Right? In general, Kshatriyas would be more than Vaishyas, Brahmins would be more than Kshatriyas, but then the individuals, then that's another thing. They may be more advanced, and it's not the general tendency. But outcasts in that are below the mentality of Shudra. In other words, they're attached to sinful activities. But they fit in the Shudra category. So therefore, lower caste Shudra.
So intellectual class is not necessarily related to Brahmin class.
Means the intellectual class is supposed to be Brahminical, but if they're not, they're called Dvijabandhu. So Dvijabandhu is another sub-classification within Shudra. Like that. So that's a general mentality. But the underlying principle depends upon the training. Right? So if there's training, you get one effect. If there's not training, you don't get it. Understand? Yeah. You know, it's like, let's say in business, someone has the ability or doesn't. It's not that you can, someone without the ability, you can train them in the ability. No, they either have it or not. So you can train them in business and they can be a businessman, or you can train them in business and they can be an assistant to a businessman. Right? But if you don't train them, then they're just existing. Right? They don't manifest those qualities. You can probably see they a little bit try something, but not a whole lot happens.
Yeah.
Is that something? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Mara.
Yes.
We see that the training, it goes on different levels. It means, you know, children, they get trained in the family, in the gurukul, if they get one.
Yes.
And the society, and like that. So it might take much longer in other, you know, like places than in some other places.
Yes, I mean, if you're in a, that just like, that's why Chanakya mentions, if the place is basically just full of Shudra mentality, or sinful mentality, yes, or fools, don't reside there, because even you do nice things, the people, fools can't understand you've done something nice. They will take, because of the mode of ignorance, they'll take a nice thing and say it's bad. You know, if someone does some selfless work, the other people, because they're foolish, they're not trained, they are totally selfish. So they can only see the world according to that. So their point is this guy is doing, he's presenting it as selfless work, but in actuality it must be selfish, so what does he want? That's why you don't associate with fools. Because it's not, you, if you can preach, you can get something, they can take up devotional service, okay. But if they don't, that's the wrong place. So that's why you should also then see where these things are. Right. So. Okay. And the principal business of such non-Kshatriya rulers will be to kill the innocent animals, especially the cows and bulls, who shall be unprotected by their masters, the bona fide Vaishyas, the mercantile community. Right. So bona fide Vaishyas. So they're saying that these unqualified Vaishyas, in other words, Vaishya Bandhus, then they, because they know how to do business, and administrators know how to, you know, create an environment for business, economics. So that combination, then the first thing they'll do is get into animal slaughter. It's you know, at least, I don't know other parts of the world, but like in America, it's a huge lobby, these things. So anything that comes up that shows it's not bad, because they came up with things like, you know, a long time ago about meat eating is carcinogenic, all these things. These things just get, just disappear because the lobby is so strong. It's very, very big money because everybody's got to eat. And so if you inspire them, they're going to eat non-veg. Then you immediately have, however big your country is, you have that many people that have to buy your product. Right? They don't have to buy a Lamborghini, but they have to buy food. Right? And if food's supposed to be non-vegetarian, right, then naturally, then yeah, that's big business, right? You don't talk about it much because it's food. You don't want to bother people. You know, you can handle a little bit. They get a little bit out of hand about people being drunk or gambling or stuff like that. So you limit. You know, you just have Atlantic City. You have it in Vegas, and people leave it alone. If it's just in Vegas, hey, Vegas is in Vegas, right? You know. What's what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, right? You know, it's just let alone. But if you open that in somebody's neighborhood, then you would see that they would complain. So they have to be very, very careful. So meat eating, they just don't talk about, because that's something everyone has to do. You don't want them to start something. Does that make sense? It's just, you know, it's good management. It means to not let them know what's going on, right? In the Bhagavad Gita 18:44, it is said that the Vaishyas are meant to deal in agriculture, cow protection, and trade. In the age of Kali, the degraded Vaishyas, the mercantile men, are engaged in supplying cows to slaughterhouses. The Kshatriyas are meant to protect the citizens of the state. Right? It means you're America, the Wild West, it was built on cow slaughter. The whole money came out of cow slaughter, right? Other than the gold they found in California. But other than that, the whole thing was developed because of cow slaughter. You know, that's what cowboys are. Okay. The Kshatriyas are meant to protect the citizens of the state, whereas the Vaishyas are meant to protect the cows and bulls and utilize them to produce grains and milk. The cow is meant to deliver milk, and the bull is meant to produce grains. But in the age of Kali, the Shudra class of men are in the posts of administrators, and the cows and bulls, or the mothers and fathers, unprotected by the Vaishyas, are subjected to the slaughterhouses organized by the Shudra administrators. Like that. So it's big. It's big. I heard one of them, I think it's the biggest in the world, I'm not sure. Something is in, I think it's somewhere in England. But it's underground, the whole thing's underground. You don't see it.
What's that?
It's one slaughterhouse in England.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's the biggest. I don't know if it's the biggest in England or...
No, it's in the whole world.
Well, yeah. It's huge. It's underground. I heard it's like 5 miles long. That means like 7.5 kilometers. But it's underground, so people don't see it, you know, like that. So it's just, you know, yeah. So otherwise, how do you arrange something like that unless the administrators allow?
Yes.
You know, just give big tracts of land and stuff like that. Because you couldn't get away with that. You know. Like that. Like I noticed here that someone set up a little like slaughterhouse and stuff like that. But it's on land that no one uses. It's like the train's not running. And then this place between the train tracks and the road, they've set up a little shop there. You know, because, you know, you don't have administrative backing. Like that. Does that make sense? So they, you know, they make do with it. So it stays small. But if you have administrative backing and the know-how of the Vaishyas, then you can make it very big. The second symptom of Kali, the secular state, i.e. the state is committed to irreligion, while religious belief is a matter of personal opinion. The next symptom of the age of Kali is that the principles of religion, which are all spotlessly white, like the white lotus flower, will be attacked by the uncultured Shudra population of the age. They may be descendants of a Brahmana or Kshatriya forefathers. Note the point that is being made here. Because otherwise, oh, well, just Shudras are that. But no, we have very intelligent people who are making these comments. It says here, no. It says, they may be descendants of Brahmana or Kshatriya forefathers. But in the age of Kali, for one of sufficient education and culture of Vedic wisdom, such a Shudra-like population will defy the principles of religion, and persons who are religiously endowed will be terrified by such men, because they always target the religious people. It's not that they just do what they're doing and they're happy. No, that the culture is so less that whatever they're doing that's wrong, they have to make that everybody should be doing it, then I can be happy that I'm okay. Because otherwise, being from these higher grade backgrounds, they know it's wrong. But if you get everybody to do it, then hey, it's fine. They will declare themselves as adherents to no religious principles, and many isms and cults will spring up in Kali Yuga only to kill the spotless bull of religion. So in other words, an ism means it's irreligious.
Yes.
Right? Because otherwise, it's already contained in religion. Religion already contains that everybody is dealt with according to their nature. That's the equality. According to your nature, everybody is dealt with. Everybody gets what they need. Right? So, but because we're not taking it from religion, we're taking it from the platform of Artha, therefore we put an ism on it. Yes. Right? Yes. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing. All we want means the population is already supposed to be protected by the state. Right? And so, therefore, your Brahmins are living by charity, your Kshatriyas are living by tax, your Vaishyas are generating the economics. So the Shudras are actually functioning in what you call a welfare state or social environment. Right? So it's already contained within the Vedic system, but for a particular group. But then to make that's the system for everybody, then it becomes an ism. You understand? Or the Vaishya's element, that becomes the central thing and that's all. That becomes an ism. You understand? Or the administrative class, that becomes an ism. Or the Brahminical, that becomes an ism. They have these anarchists. But the point is they're the only ones smart enough to function and do the right thing in an anarchy. Everybody else in an anarchy will do the wrong thing. You understand? So that's the whole thing. Ism means, if there's an ism after the word, it's already Kali Yuga. So if you hear devotees using these terms, no, but this and that, and what about, you know, I mean, you get other endings, right? You know, from ism you can get, you know, how you say, ick, you know, like that, or e, you know, you just change the endings. But the point is it's a philosophy that's not based on Dharma. Huh? That's what they call us. We say Sanatana Dharma. Good point. Right? So that's the whole thing. So that's why it's just seen as one thing. But as we're studying, we see that actually all there is pure devotional service. And a philosophy, the actually original Vedic philosophy, is a Chintamani Veda Tattva. So it's not that there's options. There's the standard, and then you have basically 8,400,000 options other than that, you know, as you go down. Okay. In the age of Kali, for want of sufficient education and culture of Vedic wisdom. So it's not because of Kali. But in the age of Kali, for want of insufficient education of Vedic wisdom. So if you give sufficient education of Vedic wisdom, then it acts like Satya Yuga. All it is that the modes are such that it allows for the mentality to drop. But if you're trained, it doesn't need to drop. So this idea, no, I'm being forced by Kali to act in this way. No, that's not, it's not real. Yes?
Maharaj, isn't the nature of jiva, not jiva, but the human being, to go towards the lower modes than to the higher? I mean, it's much more easier just to go down than to stay up.
It's because the point is you've gone from focus on spiritual into material, right? So a direction has been made, right? So now if you just continue that direction, where does it go to? Right? Until you become immovable living beings, right? You know,
yeah.
Trees, you know, stones, like that. So that's just the nature, is that because we identify with nature, you become so down that we actually become engrossed in the, you know, grossest forms of nature. So that's why if you put it the other way, Brahminical culture means it's you've taken a direction the other way. It's not that you won't be attached to these things, but you're attached in a progressive way, which is better than an unprogressive way. Because if you have proper association, then that can move forward very dynamically. But with good association, even the consciousness going in the wrong direction materially can be changed, but it's just harder culturally to adjust, right? The philosophy any devotee from anywhere catches. The difficulty is the culture. So if they're from a cultured background, then the culture is easier. They're not, it's more difficult, like that. It's not that you can't gain it by association, but the thing is if it's not valued, you won't gain it. And if the association is talking about isms, then you really won't gain it. Because for all the great work, because all these isms, the ideology has a very nice ring about it, because there's some truth in it. But it's part of something, not the whole thing. You know, it's just like if somebody's just totally into wheels on the car. It's just about wheels. So why bother with the car? We'll just have wheels. You know, so unless he's Freddie Flintstone, it's not going to work. Right? You know, he's got to have the rest of the car for the wheels. And somebody else, it's not about the wheels, it's about the chassis. Everything's connected to the chassis, so the chassis is the real thing. The other one says, no, it's all about just the motor. So he's just got a motor sitting there. Hey, you want to go for a little spin? You know, it's like, you know, there's only a motor. You know, yeah, you just rev it up a bit. Yeah, you know. And then someone else is just about the driver, so you have somebody sitting there on the pavement. Right? Does that make sense? So this is the whole thing. This is what the isms do. They take something that is actually valuable, but they remove it. They make it secular. They remove it from religion, so that at that point it becomes useless. And we can say, no, but so much good is happening. Just look in history. These things aren't new. They go way back, all these things. Where are the cultures that are following them? That Russia collapsed how long ago? What, in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
It's been almost 20 years now.
24 years.
24 years. Okay, it's been 24 years. It's amazing. Right? It's the Cold War. That whole thing is so, like, you know, conditioned to it so much. It's been 24 years. It seems like just it was yesterday. Like that. You know, but it collapsed because it doesn't work. If you get rid of vices, you don't have money to run the system. You know what I'm saying? So it's not going to work. So all of these systems have had problems, every one of them. Right? The democratic system was always there before, as we mentioned. Poland worked on that, you know, look what it got them, right? You know, Poland didn't exist for something like 190 years because everybody else thought it's a great place and annexed it to their country. So the thing is every one of these at some point in history was functioning. They've always been there. It's not new. They're old. But they have weaknesses. So then when that people get over the illusion that this is going to work, then they make an adjustment to it and say, now this is going to work. But the problem is because it takes so many generations, then the people that are there in the beginning don't understand it, right? It means they don't understand the next one. Then finally the last one understands, but they didn't quite get the full thing of what is there. They come up with a new one. They don't remember that what they're coming up with is why the first one started the one they're rejecting. Right? You know, that's the whole thing, because it goes back and forth. Yeah. Such a Shudra-like population will defy the principles of religion, and persons who are religiously endowed will be terrified by such men. So they defy it. That's just their business. Right? You know, it's just like all you have to do is look on, you know, the internet, you know, and all these blogs. What are they doing? A lot of it is just defying religious principles. Right? They will declare themselves as adherents of no religious principles. Many isms and cults will spring up in Kali Yuga only to kill the spotless bull of religion. The state will be declared to be secular or without any particular principle of religion. And as a result, there will be a total indifference to the principles of religion. So it's not that they're just being neutral and being pious. It's that then they're being impious. The point is piety gets in the way of things going smoothly, seemingly. If you want to manage something that you have to consider religion, it slows things down. You don't have to consider religion. It goes very quick. You just have to, you know, do these points and all that. Okay, you mess up people's lives, you mess up the environment, you destroy the social fabric, but you got profit. It worked. So religion means you can't do it like that. You have to slow it down or take other paths. And so that'll be seen as inefficient. So the secular mentality is very good for economics and management, which is all people talk about today.
Secular. What is it?
Secular. Secular means it's not connected with any particular religion. Right? And the fun part about it is in the West, it's generally, at least externally presented, that you can practice any religion. Like that. In India, secular means it can't be Hindu. So it's actually, of all the secular states, it's the worst. But it's the most opposed to religious principles. Like that. Interesting, but true. Yes.
What's the difference between cult and religion? Because many people think we are cult.
Cult technically means a cultivation. So we are a cult in that way. We're cultivating devotional service, so therefore we're a cult. Right? Even Prabhupada uses the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the cult of bhakti. You know, because they identify us that way. So then, yes. But the negative thing, the cult just means someone's come up with their own idea of some ideology, and then they follow that. But it's not based on religious principles. But us, it's based on religious principles. So therefore, the element of cult or ism is not a problem. The problem is one that's separated from religious principles. That's when it becomes a problem. The citizens will be free to act as they like, without respect for sadhu, shastra, and guru. The next symptom, you know, it's just like how you say. You have the element is that, how you say, the woman should have control of her own body. You know, why is it others should dictate what she does with her body? That's fine. Who's saying she can't do what she wants with her body, right? She got pregnant. That was her choice. But the point is what's in the womb is somebody else's body, not your body. So you've agreed that this body is going to take shelter in your body, and so that part's done. So you don't have control over the other body. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. People just do what they like without guru, sadhu, and shastra. Yes. That's the thing. The next symptom of the age of Kali is the distressed condition of the cow. Milking the cow means drawing the principles of religion in a liquid form. Right? So now, you can get that in an ideal way or not an ideal way, but the point is milk is liquid religion. Milk's not a political platform. You understand? Like that. The cow's milk is required for the sacrificial fire. Not, it's a good option or it's a nice thing. No, it's required. And by performing sacrifices, the householder can be happy. The cow's calf not only is beautiful to look at, but also gives satisfaction to the cow. And she delivers as much milk as possible. But in the Kali Yuga, the calves are separated from the cows as early as possible for purposes which may not be mentioned in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
The cow stands with tears in her eyes. The Shudra milkman draws milk from the cow artificially, and when there is no milk, the cow is sent to be slaughtered. These greatly sinful acts are responsible for all the troubles in present society. People do not know that what they are doing in the name of economic development. So simply if you just adjusted that one thing, so much problems would go away.
Yes.
Right? Because you're killing animals, that's going to be bad. But you kill cows, that's equivalent to killing Brahmins.
Yes.
Right? So it's
worse.
Greatly worse. Yes.
There is very strong activism in ISKCON right now about commercial dairy versus ISKCON farm dairy. 99% of the devotees do not live on farms and do use commercial dairies.
Yes.
And these activist groups are on a very strong campaign to demonize non-devotees.
That's because their position, because it's an ism, it's not devotional. That's the problem. See, if it was devotional, there'd be a whole different approach, but they're using the modern secular approach. So it's not religious. So it appears, it's just like this. There are people that need a cause. You know, just like before you had the Crusades, you know, you have all these different things. There are a group of people that have to have a cause. Otherwise, if they don't have a cause, there's nothing for them to do. So the problem is having a cause is great. That's called bhakti. It's called preaching. It's called expanding the consciousness of, you know, God consciousness. But they take an external aspect of devotional service, and instead of it being secondary, it's primary. And so if everybody doesn't do it in the exact detail as they say, you know, just like any materialist, they can only see, or any neophyte. So it's a neophyte platform. And so therefore, the neophyte means it's mixed with the prakriti. It's mixed with the material. So this is just a more extreme material attachment. And so it's not actually about the cows and this and that, because these activists, where are they living? Do they live on a farm? Are they taking care of the cows?
Oftentimes, yes.
Oftentimes, but most of the time, no. Most of the people are jumping up and down. One or two will come, and then how many will be there on the planet? I mean, I've been around to the farms. I don't see them. Where are they? You know, so there's one or two here and there. Maybe one over in Vancouver. Maybe there's one or two over in Gita Nagari.
New Govardhan.
New Govardhan. I think they kicked the guy out.
No, she's still there.
Oh, she's still there. Okay, but that's one person. Okay. But talk about the guy who can stand on his head on the horses. But, you know. Yeah.
She's going to shoot me now. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah, but that's not part of their philosophy. Like that. You can't protect cows at the expense of Brahmins. You know, they're saying, so that's also where you see is that there's something wrong. Because to protect the one means you have to break down all the others. You know, it's just like to protect the old men, you have to make everybody else uncomfortable. Protect the ladies, you make everybody uncomfortable. Protect the children, you make everybody else uncomfortable. No one ever bothers protecting the Brahmins, though, somehow or another. And somehow that's the one group that they always leave out. The other four always get, you know, some kind of crusade. But Brahmins don't. Yeah, protect the Brahmins. No, you don't get anything. But generally, all of them attack the Brahmins. So that's the thing, is it's not cultured. It's not human. So their method of going about their crusade is engaging subhuman elements. But the problem is they have to know there's reactions for those.
I'm not trying to get an endorsement or a statement out of you, but so basically devotees using commercial dairy is okay.
No, it's not a matter of okay. Nothing's okay that's not connected to Krishna, and everything's okay that is. So the point is, what they're leaving out is they're taking it, they're looking at his commercial dairy and stopping right there. They're not looking at, they're engaging that in Krishna's service. So the point is, and the point is you have the nice person living out on his farm, and he has his own cow and takes care of it and milks the cow and everything, and they all like the cow, and the cow has a name, you know, like that. You know, it's just like pigs don't have names. Do you understand? Pigs don't get names.
Babe?
I'm not
Babe. There's a movie, wasn't there Babe?
Yeah, but no one ate Babe, so that's the whole point. Do you understand? But you don't give pigs names because you're going to eat them, so it's tough. You know? Now, what's for dinner? George.
I'm George, yeah, he was cool.
Yeah, it doesn't work. China.
They don't give them names, do they?
But do they eat the pet pigs?
They eat anything that flies.
No, no, but do they eat their own pet pig? Now your pet pig, if it happens to be in the neighbor's house, that's another thing.
I've seen my neighbor raising ducks, and, you know, it's like there's so much care and attention, and one day we just don't see them anymore.
Yes, they went to, how you say, where's the place? Beijing, right?
Yeah.
that's the place for ducks to go. Yeah. Right, yeah. But, yeah, you never hear of a Guangzhou duck, right? No, not Guangzhou.
Peking duck. Peking duck.
Oh, Peking, yes. Okay, So the point is connected to Krishna, that's the real thing. Now, within connected to Krishna, now you can have finer forms. But then the point is that there wouldn't be commercial as opposed to the others. They're also, why would we use commercial cloth? Why aren't we using khadi?
Right.
It's the same principle. But it's one package. It's not that you could go with one and demonize everything else. So the thing is, it all goes together. You know? And the other thing that's also a problem, mostly in these things, is that they also don't recognize that cities and towns are also part of the Vedic system. Though generally less people live in them, more people live in the country. So that aspect also gets lost. So that's why the majority of their effort is actually mundane. You know, to try to demonize anybody who's using commercial milk. Because the point is demonize the milk, okay. But what are they doing to create this non-commercial milk? They don't have the capacity, so why are they making so much trouble? The point is if you can't give a solution, don't make the trouble. You know what I'm saying? Let's say the Olympic coach in running, he can comment on somebody's running style, that this is not good, because he can actually fix it. But someone who they themselves wouldn't know which end of the cow you're supposed to deal with. I mean, do you go to the back and take the tail in like this, and then the pumps and the milk? You know, how does it work? You know, there's a button on the nose, you know, like that. Then why are they taking this up with such enthusiasm and demonizing other devotees? So therefore, it's not spiritual. It's mundane. It, at best, it has some pious aspects to it. But it's not spiritual. Spiritual is that it's all engaged in Krishna's service. So now, if we have that, devotees, so they should be talking about the importance of milk and all this, but they're not talking about that. They're only talking about the commercial aspect. So in other words, and you also have is, it's not an uncommon thing that Vaishyas are worried about religion because religion gives artha. So you'll find a lot of times the Vaishya class will very much take something that's in the realm of ethics and push that. They're generally more bent out of shape by ethics than Brahmins or Kshatriyas. Because we can see here is that Parikshit Maharaj is bent out of shape, but as soon as he surrenders and the attitude's right, he corrects it. But among Shudras, no. It's like, it doesn't matter he's corrected. He's done something wrong. There has to be, just because they think physically, there has to be that physical retribution. So we're not talking about really high-grade culture here.
But it's influencing a lot of devotees. So many devotees.
Yeah, and then what's the influence? Then they become vegans?
They become vegans.
And then how is vegan spiritual?
It's got nothing to do with spiritual.
It's got zero to do with spiritual. So in other words, the cow who is having difficulties in this system, the commercial system, and is giving milk anyway, right? You're not connecting it to the Lord, and that cow is not getting benefits. So now you're not getting benefit of drinking milk, you're not getting finer brain tissues, Krishna's not getting his milk, and the cow's not getting benefit. So all around, no one gets benefit. Just some people feel good that now I've done something. And so for those few people to feel that they've done something great when they've done zero, then we're supposed to follow that?
No, we don't.
No. So the whole point is all these things, that's why these come up. These are simply symptoms of Kali Yuga. So this is just advancement of Kali Yuga. He's found clever ways to affect the devotees. That's all. And they'll think that it's spiritual. It's not. It's not even religious. It's sub-religious. Because they don't care about the Varnashram system. They only care about that one aspect of the system that gets their blood boiling. But the other parts, like Brahminical culture, or deity worship, or cleanliness, you know, or household life, or Gurukul, that they don't care about at all. So it's not a complete package. It's not like Parikshit Maharaj, it's the whole package. So any one part's breaking down, that has to be fixed. Yes. But this whole thing that it's one at the expense of everything else, that's secular, that's mundane.
Thank you.
What to do, but it's popular, and according to, you know, the Greek position, then popular is important, you know, and as you get more people involved, then it's vox populi, so a popular then vox populi, then it's even better. Okay. These greatly sinful acts are responsible for all the troubles in present society. People do not know what they are doing in the name of economic development. The influence of Kali will keep them in the darkness of ignorance. Despite all endeavors for peace and prosperity, they must try to see the cows and bulls happy in all respects. So it's not the endeavors for peace and prosperity, it's you take care of the cows, those things will come. So it's a good point, but not at the expense of everything else. Foolish people do not know how one earns happiness by making the cows and bulls happy, but it is a fact by the laws of nature. Let us take it from the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam and adopt the principles for the total happiness of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because the cow protection is an important element of Brahminical culture.
Yes.
Right? But we saw before, he was talking about if you don't take care of the Brahmins, respect the Brahmins, nothing's going to work. So where is this going to come from? It's going to come from the Brahminical platform, not from the social, you know, agitator, I mean from the anarchist. Because if you're only talking about one area at the destruction of the others, that's an anarchist.
Yes.
So how is anarchy going to solve a problem? Okay. Maharaj Pariksit, well equipped with arrows and bow. Footnote, he had his bow ready in case the shooter tried to flee. And seated on a gold embossed chariot, spoke with the shooter with a deep voice, sounding like thunder. Who are you? But by your dress you appear to be posing as a godly king, and yet you dare to oppose religious principles by attempting to kill helpless creatures within my kingdom. You rogue, are you trying to beat an innocent cow in a secluded place because Lord Krishna and Arjuna are now out of sight? For this offense, you deserve to be killed by me. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 6, for a pious king, the culprit who kills an animal in a secluded place is punishable by the death penalty, exactly like a murderer kills an innocent child in a secluded place. Because it's like they're considered like children, like that. So just as the state protects children, they protect the animals.
Do trees also get protected?
Trees.
Like, can you just cut down any trees?
Why would you just cut down a tree?
Because you think you need to put a dam or something.
But, see, the point is it just depends upon on this state, whatever they're doing. If the state needs to do something, then the rule is for every, means anybody, for every tree you cut down, you have to plant 10.
Oh, okay, there's a rule.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, like, if you have a property and there's a couple of trees on your property,
yes,
you cut those trees down because that's where the house is going to go.
Yes, yes.
You have to plant, if you cut down three, yes, trees, you have to plant 30.
Okay.
That's the rule.
30.
1, 10.
Yes.
Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes the following conversation between Maharaj Purkit and Kali. Who are you to commit violence in my presence? I am a king. Since I am a king, how can you have? Since I am the king, how can you be the king? I am king because I am wearing the dress of a king and acting like one. No, you are a Shudra by your actions. A real actor imitates the actions of another as truly as possible. Just as you are the king of your country, I am the king of this time. Thus you do not have power over me. Before Krishna departed out of sight with Arjuna, where were you? I was present, but I did not have power because of fear of them. But I have fear of no one today. True, you are worthy of lamentation. You desire to die today. Let that be. I will think of your first offense for a moment. Thinking this way, the king then inquired from the bull. And so he's thinking that Krishna and Arjuna will get rid of him. But now he can do whatever he wants. He doesn't quite understand Purukit's position. Maharaj Purukit then addressed the bull. Who are you? Are you simply a bull, as white as a lotus flower, who has lost three legs and is thus somehow moving on only one? Or are you a demigod who is causing us grief by having assumed this pitiful form? This is the first time in a kingdom that is protected by the Kuru dynasty that you have been seen to be aggrieved with tears in your eyes. O son of Sarabi, you can now give up your fear, for as long as I am the ruler of the earth, there will be no chance for the Shudra to exploit you. Srila Prabhupada emphasizes that protection of bulls and cows and all other animals can be possible only when there is a state ruled by an executive head like Maharaj Purukit. Right? So that means if you really want to protect the cows, then you have to establish administration that values that. You don't attack people who are using it. Right? That's political. You know, you do something about it. And then you'll only have executive heads that are there if you have Brahmins. So in other words, if they really wanted to protect the cows, then they have to cultivate the Brahminical culture. As men are made after the form and features of the Supreme Lord, so also the cows are made after the form and features of the Sarabi cows in the spiritual kingdom. In the material world, the human society gives all protection to the human being, but there is no law to protect the descendants of Sarabi, who can give all protection to men by supplying the miracle food, milk. You know, and it's not also about the milk is important because it's a miracle thing and it's used in sacrifice. It's just, you know, Prabhupada said about cows, it's something to get fired up about. Is that, you know, so it's all, the actual connections aren't being made. They'll just say, Prabhupada says we have to protect the cow, you're not protecting the cow. But you're protecting the cow by offering the milk to Krishna, so how that's not protection? You know what I'm saying? It's not the ideal arrangement. But the point is not the offering of the cow's milk to the Krishna, that's the weakness. It's that the cow themselves aren't being taken care of. You know, because, as Prabhupada pointed out, if you don't bother with the milk, they already get enough money by killing the cows. So this is on the side. So in between when they're a calf and when they stop giving milk, in those years, then you can get milk and make profit there. Then you can kill them. But if no one drinks the milk, because they're all vegans, then they'll just kill the cows anyway. It's not going to change anything. Right? That's the thing. That's why I don't take it as a real movement, as a real, you know, stand. But Maharaj Purukit and the Pandavas were fully conscious of the importance of the cow and bull, and they were prepared to punish the cow killer with all chastisement, including death. The human society should recognize the importance of the cow and bull and thus give all protection to these important animals. That's the point. Following in the footsteps of Maharaj Purukit, for protecting the cows and Brahminical culture, the Lord, who is very kind to the cow and the Brahmins, Go Brahmana Hitaya, will be pleased with us and will bestow upon us real peace. Dishonest miscreants flourish because of cowardly and impotent executive heads of state. But when the executive heads are strong enough to curb all sorts of dishonest miscreants in any part of the state, certainly they cannot flourish. When the miscreants are punished in an exemplary manner, automatically all good fortune follows. So that's why these things that seem to be out of extreme in the Vedic culture, it's exemplary. like that. People actually know what will happen.
Yes.
That is quite out of the way. Maybe you hear about it, maybe you don't. It's quite obvious. That's the... As said before, it is the prime duty of the king or the executive head to give protection to all in all respects to the peaceful, offenseless citizens of the state. Maharaj Pariksit continues. So the citizens means the humans, the cows, the trees, everybody. So it's all they all go together. Maharaj Pariksit continues. When miscreants terrify the innocent creatures within his kingdom, the king's good name, duration of life, and chance for good next birth are all spoiled. Therefore, the prime duty of a king is to relieve the sufferings of his subjects. So that's all. That includes everybody. For this reason, I will kill this most wretched man who has dared to attack you. Hoping to get a statement of accusation against the personality of Kali, Maharaj Pariksit questions the bull, who has cut off your three legs. Please tell me who has done this heinous act that is ruining the good reputation of our dynasty. Whoever causes offenseless beings to suffer must fear me, for I am prepared to punish any such person, even though he may be a denizen of heaven. So now here we're going to get in some very fine points. Why we were saying before the difficulty is these ism elements, is because there's more behind just the justice than just what is externally there. So that's there when that's the platform you're working with in general citizenry. But when you're dealing with the transcendental, then there's so many other elements to consider. In his purport to verse 16, Srila Prabhupada writes, in the scriptures there is mention of apadharma, or occupational duties at times of extraordinary happenings. It is said that sometimes the great sage Vishwamitra had to live on the flesh of dogs in some extraordinary dangerous position. In cases of emergency, one may be allowed to live on the flesh of animals of all description, but that does not mean that there should be regular slaughterhouses to feed the animal eaters, and that the system should be encouraged by the state. No one should try to live on flesh in ordinary times simply for the sake of the palate. If anyone does so, the king or the executive head should punish him for gross enjoyment. Now, if you're living on the North Pole, right, you know, the season for cauliflowers is a little too short to get any benefit. Right? You know, so someone like that, but those are tribals. You know, so like that. But in society, the rest of the world that we call the Western world, they can grow enough things that they don't need. In fact, they always dump it in the ocean or do funny things with it. The point is there's plenty, so there's no need. Yes.
That's another question I've had ever since I joined the Hare Krishna movement, because I'm from Canada. So when you talk about North Pole, it's right next to
So if the Inuits are eating, you know, what do you call it, you know, seals and stuff, don't worry about it.
Every time in village, so eventually maybe one day some devotees will want to go there.
So then they understand this by Krishna's grace that they're getting the arrangements they have, and they should chant Hare Krishna and read the books. And then if they decide, okay, maybe this is not the ideal culture, they can head south. Right? And if they're happy where they are, hey. Yes.
And we can see also Vishwamitra is not an exemplary character. Maybe it's some consequences of that.
Not necessarily. And this example is not given that way. This is just given that there is no other situation, because the point is this human life is meant for self-realization. So if you're engaged in self-realization, then if the only way to maintain yourself is through mediating, then that can be done, because then you're engaged in the activities of spiritual development. So we see that it was a one-off incident. It wasn't like he was regularly, you know, always going out looking for dog burgers.
hot dog.
Yeah, hot dog. So it wasn't that's not the case. But the point is the difficulty is that to maintain. The difficulty with meat eating, it distracts, because then it's about the palate. And so then you're willing to do such sinful activities simply for taste. And so then if that's there, that affects all other aspects of your life. So there's a good chance you will not continue in spiritual activities. So what we're talking here is not, it's difficult, we're talking life or death. You know, that's what we're talking about. You know, because generally if you're in a place where there's a McDonald's, we're not talking life and death. Does that make sense? Yeah. There are regular scriptural injunctions for different persons engaged in different occupational duties, and one who follows them is called svadharmastha, or faithful in one's prescribed duties. In the Bhagavad Gita 18:48, it is advised that one should not give up his occupational prescribed duties, even if they are not always flawless. Such svadharma might be violated in cases of emergency, if one is forced by circumstances. But they cannot be violated in ordinary times. Ordinary means there is another option.
Yes.
Right? Mm. Extraordinary means there is no other option.
Yes.
Right. Such svadharma might be violated in case... Okay. If one is forced by circumstances, but they cannot be violated in ordinary times. The state executive head is to see that such svadharma is not changed by the follower, whatever it may be, and he should be given all protection. He should give all protection to the followers of Dharma. Right? So a tribal, living as a tribal is not a problem. Right? So the problem here is the tribal is presenting himself as an elevated king, but still performing even less than tribal activity. Right? So that's a problem. The violator is subject to punishment in terms of the shastra, and the duty of the king is to see that everyone strictly follows his occupational duty as prescribed in the scripture. That's what the king's supposed to do. He's supposed to create a safe environment in which everyone can perform their duty, but he's seeing that they are performing their duties. He's not controlling their life. He's seeing that they're performing their duties. Right? So we also have to understand it. What the limit of administration is. It's not to control your life, it's to see that you're doing your duties. You know, just like the Brahmins see that the Kshatriyas are doing their duties. And the Kshatriya sees that everybody is doing theirs. Right? Because if the Kshatriya doesn't know what are the duties, then how will they do their duty? Right? So that's the system. Yes?
So then it means that Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, they require more training. Because then
yes.
They know everybody else's duties.
Yes, that's the point. But you can only know everybody else's if you know your own.
Right.
So this whole thing is if administrators don't know what their position is. Well, what are we? What is our varna? Then that's lack of training. Then how will they guide anyone else? The point is, if you don't know who you are, how can you guide others? So the more you understand what your conditioning is, then the more you can help others. Because you've realized the self. So that means then you can help others realize the self.
Yes.
Right? Like that. So it's easy. That's why anybody of any position, it doesn't matter, can preach because of self-realization. If one's a Shudra, he understands he's a Shudra, but that's his occupation. That has nothing to do with the principles of devotional service and how to engage your nature in the Lord's service. Like that.
Yes.
Yeah, so it works. Like I remember one devotee, real gentleman, real dependable, whatever he say would do, really responsible, like that. And it was interesting, I was talking one day, and somehow another got into talking to Varnashram, and he made it very, very clear, I'm a Shudra, right? Because he used to drive cars. He says, I'm a Shudra, like that. But he was the best at driving cars, very safe, no false ego, real good service attitude, and everything like that. And whenever devotees had problems, like personal problems, they go to him. Right, because he was such an honest, you know, very like that. But he was a good devotee. It wasn't that he was just a good driver. He, you know, he good sadhana. Because of this, he was fixed. So he knew what he was there. He was fixed in the sadhana. So devotees would go to him and ask advice. And even the senior administrators and preachers would sometimes discuss with him what should be done. Like we could see is that Prabhupada mentions about, I think it's about Bosch, who ran the company, that he would go for drives in the car with his driver. And discuss all kinds of things with him because, you know, as a driver, and he was not a young man, he had so much life experience, he could give so many, he could say so many useful things, but he's not in control, he's just sharing his experience. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that it doesn't matter what the position is, it's always of value within the society. It's just you have to know what it is. So the Shudra may advise the Brahmin or the Kshatriya personally, or the Vaishya personally, but they don't have control occupationally. You understand? So that's what, because the Shudra is about the personal, the emotional, the, like that. So that's where their strength is.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Because of that tendency which making us to present ourselves different than we are.
It's generally ego.
It's like, don't see it happening so much here in India. Shudras are happy they're Shudras.
Yeah, no, I have people that tell me their caste is Nama Shudra. Nama means below Shudra. And they don't have a problem talking about it. Oh, yes, well, you know, so, oh, we're Nama Shudras. You know, the tribals, they're tribals. You know, they don't have a problem.
Muslims, they don't mind the Muslims.
Yeah.
Is it an Islam problem?
Sorry?
Is it an Islam problem?
No, 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 it's a Western problem. It's a white man's problem. Right? Because they, it's all about the prestige in that. So generally, anybody outside that system, the Western system, they don't have any really difficulty seeing where they fit into the system at all. But the Western system, specifically the whites, and especially the WASPs, they're the ones that have the greatest problem.
What's a WASP?
A WASP? White Anglo-Saxon Protestants. They have the greatest difficulties. No?
Yeah,
that's what they call it. Yeah. That's the name.
Yeah.
It is. Come on.
There's another category next to
it. You mean the homeboys? Or? Yeah, but you know, they don't have any problem either. You know, so the whole thing is stemming from that. It's inherent in everybody. You also see it in the Indian culture, is that they're born as Brahmins, and so then they think. But it's the others don't have a problem with their position. I've seen Indian devotees, let's say Vaishya background, they have no problem. They're Vaishyas. But they're very strict in following the duties of their thing. You know, their father and grandfather told them something. When you're doing the business, you know, do it like this. Or had one Vaishya, his father told him, says, don't deal in leather and these kind of things, because there's sinful alcohol, leather, like that. So even though he had opportunity to get involved in these things, and he was a good businessman, so he would have made a lot. He wouldn't. You know, or others that says, we're supposed to give in charity to the Brahmins. You know, and this is a devotee talk. I mean, both of these were devotees. So, well, it's not a problem if they're there and you're very comfortable because you're going to work with it. But then those who don't understand the system or those who aren't trained, they may try to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
You know, or most of the time it's just a matter of prestige. So yeah. Okay. Verses 17 to 27. The conversation between Maharaj Parikit and Dharma. The bull answers Maharaj's inquiries about the cause of his distress. After hearing the bull's reply, Maharaj Parikit recognizes the bull to be the personality of religion, Dharma, and begins to answer him with words full of respect. Dharma replied, "Your words are just befitting a descendant in the line of the Pandavas, O best among the human beings. It is very difficult for me to ascertain the miscreant who has caused our sufferings. For I have become bewildered by the various opinions of theoretical philosophers."
Mm.
Yes.
But what symptoms he, Maharaj Parikit, recognized Dharma in disguise of bull only because he didn't point at Kali directly?
Well, no, because this is, that's one of the things. So it's philosophical, because your common person, you say, you know, why are you so distressed? And immediately there's, you know, a finger can be pointed in some direction. Right? So he's not doing that. So that means he's thoughtful. He's actually looking at what's going on. Plus, you have a bull as white as lotus. You don't get those so often. You know, there's a little gray here and there. He's just like pure white. Plus, he's moving about on one leg. It's not that he's lying on the ground dragging himself. He's just, there's one leg and then there's this bull. Right? You understand? So that also, you know, could be a symptom. Right? Yeah, okay. You know, you put it all together. Plus, here he's talking to the bull, and the bull is talking back in Sanskrit. You know, he says, so, who's bothering you? That's all he got, then, okay. Then we deal with God. Here he's getting some... And not only is talking in Sanskrit, but he's giving philosophy.
Yeah.
Right? And he says... various opinions of theoretical philosophers, that means he knows them all. So not only, you know, he knows a little philosophy, you know, he's not just like a, you know, how you say, what do you call that, songwriter philosopher. You know, he's not like that, you know. He's like, he's, you know, and he also didn't notice any guitar, right? You know, so there's, it seems to be, yeah? Okay? Okay.
He's not a Shudra bull.
Yeah, he wasn't a Shudra bull. In his purport to verse 18, Srila Prabhupada explains, although the bull, or the personality of religion, and the cow, the personality of the earth, knew perfectly well that the personality of Kali was the direct cause of their sufferings, still as devotees of the Lord, they knew well also that without the sanction of the Lord, no one could inflict trouble upon them. According to the Padma Purana, our present trouble is due to the fructifying of seedling sins. But even those seedling sins also gradually fade away by execution of pure devotional service. Right? So there is no back. The seeds go. Right? So seedling sins. Right? So those will all go away, and the seeds themselves won't sprout. So there actually is not any reactions from the past for the devotee. At the same time, as whatever reactions are there are not actually from the past. They just mirror that because of our mentality. So if the mentality's changed, even that doesn't have to happen. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So you're dealing with, even on karma, that devotional service is stopping that wheel of karma. So whatever happens to us, we'll say it's our past karma. But ultimately, it's not, because the point is Krishna's involved. If Krishna doesn't sanction it, it doesn't happen. So it's not actually because of the karma. It's because Krishna allows it to happen.
Yes.
And why would he allow that one to happen? It matches the mentality and the situation you're in. Therefore, it happens. But it's not that it's happening because of its past karma. It's happening because Krishna allows it, because you will be corrected by it. So it's Krishna karma. Thus, even if the devotees see the mischief mongers, they do not accuse them for the suffering inflicted. Maybe we should put that one up on Facebook. They take it for granted that the mischief monger is made to act by some indirect cause, and therefore they tolerate the sufferings. In other words, an indirect cause. So ultimately, of course, the Lord sanctioned, but why would he sanction that activity unless there was something I needed to learn from it based on my previous actions that showed I didn't have the right attitude? Right? And if my attitude's changed now, why would it come now unless it was either to benefit me, that I need to learn something, or I've already learned and therefore I'm the proper medium for others to learn. Does that make sense? Like if you have a thief who's been reformed, he's in a good position to help other thieves reform. Right? Rather than taking a nice person that doesn't know thievery and try to get them to reform thieves, because how will they relate? Does that make sense? You know, so that's the... Yeah. Does that make sense? So in either case, it's connected to me. Either I was in that position, though I'm not now, and so now it's for example for others, or I was in that position but still have some residue of that consciousness, so by going through that I get purified and connect to Krishna. Yes. Okay. They take it for granted that the mischief monger is made to act by some indirect cause, and therefore they tolerate the sufferings, thinking them to be God-given in small doses, for otherwise the sufferings would have been greater. Right? The small doses. So even if it's there, it is smaller. So the one thing you can know is whatever you're getting, it would have been worse.
Yes.
Right? Like that. Like Prabhupada says, you get a little nick on the finger, you should have lost your arm or been killed. Like that, so it's been reduced. Like that. You know. So we're complaining about how bad it is. No, it's been reduced. Like that. Because one's a devotee, so what has to be learned is very small. Maharaj Parikshit wanted to get a statement of accusation against the direct mischief monger, but they declined to give it on the above mentioned grounds. Because then, you know, you're dealing with the justice system. Is there obvious something happening? He's doing something, they just want to make sure connected. That's what's the whole. You know, it could be that, you know, they've been walking through and there's been a whole long line of these guys. We say he's the last guy. There's another 20 on the same road. You know, so, you know, does that make sense? Speculative philosophers, however, do not recognize the sanction of the Lord. Right? So they only see the justice thing. So they only see, the whole reason the cow is suffering, you know, as we were talking before, is in this case is because Kali is beating. No, but the Lord, there's something going on here. Right? And then the thing is, you know, the devotees, the only reason the cows are suffering because you're buying commercial milk rather than you know, how you say, cow-friendly dairy farming, like that. But the point, no, there's something else going on here. Like that. They tried.
Many years ago, one senior devotee made a comment to me. We were visiting some farms, and we were riding past a pasture with cows. Obviously, they were, you know, cows raised for slaughter. You know, and this is, what do you think about these cows? He said, actually, don't see them as cows. They're actually not cows. They are people incarnated in that cow to be slaughtered as a result of
this. Yes, no, that's true. That's true. Yeah, yeah, it's a fact. Point is for one hair on an animal's body that you kill, that many times you will be killed in the same way. Like our head has about 100,000 hairs on it. So imagine how many hairs are on a cow's body. You're talking about, you know, a lot of hairs here. You know, like that.
Some bulls and cows, you know, are moving like that.
Because that's what the whole scene is for. But I mean, that at the same time, you shouldn't make snide comments about Belgian cows. They just look that way anyway. So, no, that's the whole thing, is that the ones that are being killed are the ones that they were the ones previously that are bent. So once you go into the system, you know, you have tens of millions of times you're going to go through that system, right? So, but it's not that it's good. The point is the people that are involved don't have to be the ones. It will happen anyway. You don't have to have started, you know, you don't have to own McDonald's. You know, you don't have to have a franchise. You don't have to work in the place. You know what I'm saying?
It's already happened.
It'll happen by some other way. You don't have to worry about it. So even if you're the cow from the last time, you don't have to get involved. Even though it's your right, you have the justice to do, but then because you've done it now, it's still bad killing a cow. Now you, even though you were the cow and you got justice, you'll be the cow next life, and that because they were the cow, now they get the other thing. So it just goes on and on. That's the problem with justice. You have to come back again to receive the results.
Yes.
So, you know, so much of the time devotees are talking about justice, that means that they're also talking about rebirth. You know, wasn't that this Peter, Paul, and Mary song? Talking about justice, talking about rebirth, talking about... Yeah. That's the... Right? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that they don't catch what actually they're involved in. That's the point, is that these lower levels, we always focus on that, very rarely on Dharma. Devotees very rarely discuss Dharma. Artha, oh yeah, that's like, you know, basically any meeting you go to, it's Dharma. I mean, Artha. And they shy away from sense gratification because they know it's not good. But, you know, as in the modern philosophy, what nobody knows, you know, is what you get away with, you know. But the principle is that we are involved in Dharma as a basis. And then the point is about self-realization, the moksha element. Because the other, if you're dealing with Dharma, you're already taking care of the body, mind, and intelligence. Then it's about understanding the soul and then trying to develop that love for Krishna and bhakti. So our lifestyle is dharma. Our consciousness is on spiritual, and that we're trying to take into through that application in the bhakti. That's how we situate ourselves. So when people try to situate and try to make it that the social norm is on artha, that's substandard. But that's what everybody's conditioned to. So it's not strange that that may happen. It's just a waste of time. Is that... Yes.
By training, we can change.
Yes, by training, we can change. In other words, whatever the conditioning, it doesn't matter. You can function at a purified state. In other words, every conditioning that's there has its natural state in dharma.
Yes.
So you can function in goodness. But if we choose to function in passion and ignorance, we'll remain there. Right? We're doing devotional service, so the devotional service will give knowledge and detachment. So if we can remember Krishna at the time of death, great, then we'll go back to Godhead. But if we don't, then we're going to be, it'll be according to that conditioning. You know? And so then we're going to have to go through that stuff again. So if we're willing to move on from that and function within our capacity in the mode of goodness, right, then, you know, goodness to pure goodness, that works quite easily. It's not such a major, you know, like that. But, you know, it's like, let's say, you're in business, and then you somehow another arrangement, they move you up into first class. It's not so. But then if something, next time you're back in business, it still works. But if you go from economy, you know, to first class, then back to economy, that's a problem.
Yes.
So that's what we're talking about if we don't accept the mode of goodness as our standard lifestyle position. Right? So it's much more extreme. Speculative philosophers, however, do not recognize the sanction of the Lord. They try to find out the cause of sufferings in their own way, as will be described in the following verses. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, such speculators are themselves bewildered, and thus they cannot know that the ultimate cause of all causes is the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead. Right, so they're finer thinkers than just what's immediate. You know, then there's, you know, finding immediate but still just within the justice system. Okay, he did this, you know, he killed this man. Okay, so that's bad, so like that. But he killed this man who happened to be, when he walked into his bedroom, in bed with his wife. Yeah. Right? Then his people will make some slight adjustments. So instead of being, you know, first degree murder, it'll be manslaughter. You know? Like that. So they'll make these adjustments. It's finer. Right? But we're talking about taking it more than that. They'll take it back into the causes of, duties, this and that. But still, it's not coming to the point of the Lord. That's the problem. The personality of religion continued to speak in the guise of a bull, continued to present various philosophical positions on the cause of human suffering. Others say that it is superhuman power that is responsible. Still others claim that one's acts are the cause. There are scientists of gross materialism to explain that all suffering is ultimately caused by nature. Right? Right, so you're going to get your different opinions here, right? So that it is coming from how you say, what do you say? What's the first? Superhuman power. Then it's coming from nature, or it's just coming from your karma. They're all basically saying the same thing, they're just taking a little different angles of it. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur comments on these different opinions. Some, the yogis, say the soul, master of the self, gives happiness and sufferings. The Gita 6.5 says, Atmaiva hyatmano bandhur, Atmaiva ripur atmana. The Atma itself is the friend of the soul and the enemy of the soul. Or the meaning can be, some, the Advaitins, who say that the Jiva and the Lord become one, say that the Atma is the source of happiness and suffering. They also say that the Devatas cannot be the cause since they are controlled by karma as well. And karma cannot be the cause because it is not independent. Thus, only the Atma is the cause and nothing else. Okay? So that's the first one. Because it says the soul is the cause of it, But see, they're still not including the Lord in here. It's quite developed. But it's like, you can't say that that the demigods are doing it, because they're controlled by karma. Because they're in the position, and they're just doing what they're supposed to do. Right? Your eyelids are supposed to blink. The demigods in charge of eyelid blinking makes the eyelids blink. Right? Now, and they're controlled by karma. Right? And then you can say karma is the thing, but unless you've done something, then karma can't act. So it's actually the soul. Does that make sense? But they stop at that point. So here, because the soul is interested in the material nature, therefore they suffer. The soul doesn't get involved, he doesn't suffer. Okay, mechanically, you know, sound. But the problem is it still stops short of it's the Lord and the Lord's system. That's why it works this way. Thus only, okay. Others, those who believe in planets controlled by devatas, say that the planets are the cause. Right? Because the planet is there, and because of this, the planet was here, that's why this happened to me.
Yeah.
Right? The mumsikas, right, but then they don't, but point is then again, but that's, they'll just look only that far. But the point is the planet is controlled by devata, who's controlled by karma, and that you're only getting the reaction that you've done something for, and the planets are only delivering it.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, the man brings the box to your door, and you can't say it's because he's the one who gave you that material. No, it came from somewhere else. Right?
Yes.
And so you know, there's things behind it. But, you know, this is as far as they look. The Mimamsakas say that karma is the cause. Others, because they're just looking at karma itself, because you're getting the reaction from karma. Others, the Lokayatas, say that Swabhava, the inherent property of matter, is the cause. Right? So that the matter itself, you deal with in that particular way, it gives you a reaction in one way. You don't deal, you get it, it deals in another way. Right? You deal with material nature properly, you get that result. You don't deal properly, so material nature is what's giving the result. Right? I deal badly with material nature, I get a bad result. Right? So the nature of God. So we see is that all these are included in that first one. But that first one is included in what we'll say.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Its cause is not the Atma itself, since the Jiva is dependent. The cause is not the planets, because they depend on the movement of time. The cause of suffering and happiness is not karma, because it is insentient. Moreover, the man of karma, following the path of the Mamamsikas, has Prarabdha and Aprarabdha karmas. If so, then their idea that following the path of karma destroys suffering is negated, because he has reactions coming from the past anyway. His idea is, I'll only do good, I'll only get good, but he's getting bad, so that means that both are coming. Right?
Mm.
So it's never going away. And even if he gets good, it's still karma.
Yes.
You still have to be around for it, and it's still going to be material. So bhava is not the cause, since it is not an exclusive cause. Right? Nature isn't functioning just on its own, independently. The Lord, as the cause, is absolute. Bhishma has said already that the plan of the Lord, however, is impossible for everyone to understand. So that's why if we use these lower ones, like if you say, oh, you know, I heard you having some problem. Yeah, what to do? You know, Krishna's plan. You know, then people go, well, no, but what happened? You know, like this, you know, like that. People say, yeah, you know, you know, this planet is there now, and so it's creating this, and everyone goes, oh, yeah, right. Yeah, or it's my karma, I must have done this to them in the last life, so therefore they did. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, no, you know, you're just not dealing properly with, you know, how things work. I did the work wrong, therefore I got the bad reaction. Yeah, you should do it right. Yeah, true. Do you understand? We'll buy all of the other ones before. But if we just say Krishna's the ultimate cause, so therefore, you know, it's Krishna's plan, then it's kind of like, well, hey, where's my controlling and enjoying here?
Yeah.
You know, so then,
but if you include all those in Krishna's plan, then you can explain some things for your own understandings.
Yes, but the point is if it doesn't connect back to Krishna, it's still a useless explanation. That's the point. You know, in other words, dealing with the Vedic only has value as long as that's connected to Krishna. Right? If it's not connected to Krishna, it's useless. But of Vedic not being connected to Krishna and non-Vedic not being connected to Krishna, the Vedic not being connected to Krishna is better quality useless than non-Vedic not connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, so that's, you know, at least he's a better useless. He's not an ordinary useless.
Same principle applies for Jyoti.
Jyoti, it means anything. When I say Vedic, yes. I mean all the branches of knowledge. So Jyotish, Ayurveda, Nyaya, all these different things. If they're not connected to Krishna, they're useless. So like in Nyaya, if it's not connected to Siddhanta, if you're not getting Siddhanta out of the process of Nyaya, it's not connected to Krishna. Because Krishna says, I am Siddhanta. Mm. Right? So if it's only to win the argument, that's rhetoric, so that's not Krishna. Yes.
Sometimes we hear, like, will you come for dinner? Krishna willing. And it's a little bit like...
Yes, so then you don't bring it up again. They're not the ones to invite. Okay. Krishna willing.
Krishna willing.
Yeah. So the whole point there is, but Krishna willing, but you have to make the endeavor. Krishna only fulfills the desires when you make the endeavor. You know, so he says, I'd like to come and I'll make that endeavor, but it's up to Krishna whether I make it. You know, it means, you know, there could be an earthquake and, you know, your house could fall in, or, you know, how you say, you know.
Someone may come with a Baba Kalava.
Yeah, but then that wouldn't be nice because you already have another arrangement. It means a UFO could come and take you and for, you know, special experimentation, you know, see how much halava you can actually eat, you know, before you explode or something like that. You know, there's all kinds of things like that. You know, just as you're on your way, then, you know, the president of the country comes and, you know, the guys pull up in their black Chevys and, you know, put a bag over your head and take you off because the guy wanted to ask you some questions. You know, so like that. He wanted to know, you know, what to do and, you know, it's a personal situation and how to apply that in Krishna consciousness. You know, so all these kinds of things. So things could happen, but you're making the endeavor. But if you just say, well, let's see, you know, what Krishna's plan is. No, the point is if you don't make an endeavor, Krishna's plan is to engage you in Krishna's service. Not Krishna's plan is he's got something that he's doing against your, how you say, will. Right? You have the will to do things that happen to you. Right? That's why they happen. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's not like the guy is down there at the docks, right? He doesn't, you know, he himself is, you know, wouldn't have any idea about dancing. In fact, he thinks dancing is really stupid. You know, he's there, he's got his, you know, t-shirt, he's got his tattoos, and he's like this, and he's doing his job, and then suddenly all these limousines pull up and all that, and they get out, and then they come out to give him an award from the, you know, Haishai Bolshai Ballet about, you know, the top dancer and stuff like that. Is it going to happen? No, because it's not his karma, right? Because things only happen to you that are within the area of your interest.
Yes.
So that's the point.
Yes.
Therefore, O King, Dharma concluded, you must judge for yourself with the help of your good intelligence and thus ascertain the real culprit. 1920, because the point is he's asked him who's beating you, so he can't say. But who's doing now, who's involved as the direct instrument of beating his colleagues? So he should be punished for that. But the point is how the individual looks at it. He looks at it in the other way. Pointing out what all these types of philosophers miss in their speculative accounts of embodied suffering, Srila Prabhupada states in the purport to verse 20, a living being may be forgetful, may forget all that he might have done in his past or present life. But one must know that in the same tree of the material body, the individual soul and the supreme soul as Paramatma are sitting like two birds. One of them, the living being, is enjoying the fruits of the tree, whereas the supreme being is there to witness the activities. Right? So in other words, you're enjoying the fruits of the tree.
Yes.
Right? Okay, that's fruits. Then there's tree. Where'd the tree come from? Tree came from the seedling. Seedling came from the seed. Who sprouted the seed? Us. Right? So we're enjoying those fruits. So it's, you understand? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be the same thing. You don't sprout a tree that gives one fruit and you're going to get another fruit. Right? You don't sprout a tree that gives oranges and get apples. Right? So it's not going to be different. One of them, the living being, is enjoying the fruits of the tree, whereas the Supreme Being is there to witness the activities. Therefore, the Paramatma feature, the Supreme Soul, is actually the witness of all activities of the living being. And only by his direction can the living being remember or forget what he might have done in the past. Like that. It is, because otherwise we're not exactly, technically we're the witness, but we're not exactly the witness, because he's the real witness. He is, therefore, both the all-pervading impersonal Brahman and the localized Paramatma in everyone's heart. He is the knower of all past, present, and future, and nothing can be concealed from him. The devotees know this truth, and therefore they discharge their duties sincerely without being overly anxious for rewards, because it's just a matter of pleasing him. It's not a matter of getting results. The only reason one wants the results, they can be offered to Krishna. Like, that's the whole point. Besides that, one cannot estimate the Lord's reactions, either by speculation or by scholarship. Why does he, the Lord, put some into difficulty and not others? He is the supreme knower of the Vedic knowledge, and thus he is the factual Vedantist. Right? He's the Vedantist, he knows what's happening. So therefore, it's all done nicely because he knows. At the same time, he is the compiler of the Vedanta. Right? No one is independent of him, and everyone is engaged in his service in different ways. Right? So you could say he is the factual Vedantist, so therefore he has to follow the Vedas. No, but he's the compiler of the Vedanta as well. So he's still independent. Right? No one is independent of him, and everyone is engaged in his service in different ways. In the conditioned state, such services are rendered by the living being under force of the material nature. Whereas in the liberated state, the living being is held by the spiritual nature in the voluntary loving service of the Lord. So if you're in material nature, it's voluntary, you're there, but you're forced, because you've taken that, you're forced to take those reactions. While in the spiritual, you take shelter there, then you work under the spiritual potency. Then everything works out nicely in that way. There's no incongruity or inebriety in his actions. It means Krishna's actions. All are on the path of absolute truth. Bhishma Dev correctly estimated the inconceivable actions of the Lord. Footnote 8. Now I can meditate with full concentration upon that one Lord, Sri Krishna, now present before me, because now I have transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart. Even in the hearts of the mental speculators, he is in everyone's heart. The sun may be perceived differently, but the sun is one. 1.9.43. Because otherwise the tendency is to think there's a difference. Right? It means, in other words, the soul in devotees' body is different from the soul in others' body. So in the same way we'll think the super soul is different. But it's one person. Right? It's just he is expanded light, but it's still one person. It's not all different super souls. It's not that two super souls. You're standing next to each other on the train like that, and you're talking like that, and the super souls are talking, and you know. So it's not working like that. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayanitai Gaurav.